Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm your host, Bursa Goodness. The Final Straw is also available on KXCF in Marshall, California, and KWTF in Santa Rosa, California. The show is supported by Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina, providing organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found at firestormcafe.com. This week we're joined by Abrasha Bloom and Ruth, two members of Anarchists Against the Wall. Abrasha is currently living in Arizona in the U.S., and Ruth lives in Israel. Anarchists Against the Wall is a movement of mostly Israeli citizens standing in solidarity with the Palestinian people by putting their own bodies on the line alongside their nonviolent resistance to the building of the apartheid walls, new settlements, the taking of lands from the Palestinian communities, and the forced internment of displaced and resistant populations. Abrasha and Ruth, can you give us some history of Anarchists Against the Wall? How long has it been around, and what brought about its creation?
Well, I'll give a bit of background of the popular struggle, because it's even, and this make people understand more about where Anarchists Against the Wall started. In the year of 2002, the Israeli government decided to build the separation barrier, or security barrier, as they call it, apartheid wall, or whatever name you want to give it, which will separate most of the West Bank from Israel. Instead of going on the Green Line, which is recognized by most of the international community, it's going deep through the Palestinian land, confiscating a lot of farmers' land in cities, villages, etc., etc. Around the beginning of 2003, they started a nonviolent struggle against the construction of the wall. And in the end of 2003, or half of 2003, there was an activist camp in the village of Mascha, where they sent in a general invitation for Israelis and international activists to join the popular struggle. And this is a place where the group of Israelis who've been involved with different Palestinian activism actually joined together, and an anarchist group out of that came out and adopted the name Anarchists Against the Wall. The funny thing is that this is what the media actually adopted. The group didn't really care what name going to be called, but most of us, I wasn't there actually, but most of the people there agreed with that name. It's an Israeli based, because these are people who started, but it's open to any person who want to join the popular struggle with, for everybody, more or less, there is no like restriction who want to join it. We don't want to people who harm the Palestinian struggle. You need to accept and respect that it's a Palestinian-led struggle, and we're just joining different invitations. So we're based on consent, more or less.
Do you find conflict in being anarchists involved in what's presented by many sides in the media as a national liberation struggle?
I think, first of all, perhaps not concentrating so much on how it's viewed in the media, I think what's important to understand, and perhaps this will clarify it for a lot of people, this isn't necessarily just a struggle, like a nationalistic struggle. It's also a struggle for freedom from oppression. It's a struggle for liberation, and I think that's definitely something that I personally, I know a lot of other people feel is the reason why we feel that we, you know, to join this, because the daily impact that the occupation has on Palestinians' lives it's a daily oppression, and I think that's first and foremost where their struggle comes from. Just talking to, you know, young Palestinians my age, often they talk about the fact that this is a struggle for justice and equality. They're not necessarily talking about a nationalistic struggle or even a struggle over land, but a struggle for equality and justice. And I think that's something that, especially as anarchists, speaks to us. And I think, you know, I think to a lot of human beings that kind of makes sense.
if I can add just shortly that also I think it's very privileged to dismiss like this struggle because it's nationalist. I grew up an Israeli, fully white, male, privileged Jewish boy. And just to say, because now I'm an anarchist and I don't believe in nation state, I won't stand with solidarity with the people that that been oppressed in my name. It's a very privilegialistic kind of thing that many anarchists try to do around the world. I believe that personally that solidarity and fighting for justice, and as Ruth said, equality is before any kind of revolutionary worldwide anarchist change, but I think it's something that we probably will have more success in the short term. Also, as she said, we're not talking about solution, we're talking about solidarity with actions, and there is a popular movement that's trying to lead to some of the solution, but the reality became so complicated that we talk about all the solutions that are possible, you know, who knows what the solution will be to this conflict, but starting with justice and hopefully creating some better reality for Palestinians, and then during a solution we can find out how that be. But for now there is a struggle going on, and if you are in Palestine and Israel and you're not taking part of it, you're pretty much collaborating with the occupation, in my point of view.
I also think that in terms of like the whole militaristic thing, I think I'm pretty sure most anarchists are against that. The fact that there's not just, you don't have just a presence of soldiers in the West Bank. The whole system of the occupation is a military system. So, you know, it's all very well and nice for us to say, nationalistic struggle or whatever, but as a citizen of Israel, if I'm arrested in the West Bank, I get treated as a citizen. So I get, you know, I have to see a judge within 24 hours. I'll probably be released quite quickly. Maybe I'll go to court, pay bail. But, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, I'm treated with, in the eyes of the law, quite fairly. Whereas in the West Bank, if a Palestinian is arrested, he gets seen by a military judge with military laws, with laws of occupation. And I think that's also something we're fighting against, is this militarism that exists, actually not even just in the West Bank, also within Israel, 48.
How has direct struggle alongside Palestinian peoples, for y'all as Israelis, changed the group's dynamic and individual relationships with people in the occupied territories?
It's a very good question.
Well, the idea of, I'll tell you how we work with villages, and I think it will give you, and whoever listening to this, a good idea of how it might affect the members. We don't go to places and say, oh, hi, we are anarchists against the world, can we work with you? We always come to places where we're invited to be active, which comes with more respect than many past left-wing Israeli movements who always knew what's the best for Palestinians and patronized them. And I think every activist has different story of how they came to be part of Anarchists Against the World, which village they feel the most comfortable, or city, what struggle. I was involved in Nialin from the first demonstrations they had against the wall. I'm still in touch. I have a good friends over there. I really think it's like the moment you get involved, there's no way back of how you see reality. And this is my argument with many of my Israeli friends or people that I know in Israel, that always, even if they're not, they're still in the Zionist kind of framework, even if they're not super right-wing, still, nobody goes to the West Bank, right-wing or left-wing, and they always think they know what's happening there. And the moment you go there and you create personal relationship, sometimes it's involved, sometimes, most of the time it's very intense, the intensivity of a struggle in Palestine, which is extremely army violence. People don't really understand this violent nature. It's beyond the demonstration, which use dangerous weapons. It's also the daily life. You know, you go for a checkpoint to visit your mom, and it can take you 5 hours instead of 15 minutes just because you need to cross this humiliation in the middle. And And I think for me, I also was in a very intense village for a while where five people were killed by the army, and like, you just can't see things differently. On the other hand, there are places where after one or two activities, you're like, okay, we can't really work with this village. They don't really want us. The people who contact us were like five people out of 5,000 or 100. And you accept it and you're not upset. You're kind of sorry you lost your, maybe the hours at night, the day. But I think the biggest change for many Israelis is that they actually see the reality and they're becoming respectful for Palestinians and their choices. And you can see it, I think, among most activists. There are a lot of clashes because of the cultural difference, but it's things that most of the time worked out. And if you don't feel comfortable, you just don't need to go anywhere.
Everyone who kind of goes out on a regular basis, and particularly those who find, you know, they found themselves in one particular village that they'll go to not only on Fridays, but also during the week. I mean, also for weddings and stuff. I mean, there's one village which I was involved in and still am today. It's quite a lot in Al-Walaja, which is where the wall is being built right now. And it's basically going to be turned into a ghetto. The whole village will be surrounded with a wall. And I've been invited there to a wedding, and I've got to know a couple of families there very, very well. And we'll talk like once a week, and I'll go, you know, you go see people even in the middle of the week. And I think it also goes into places where if there's, if someone in the village where we've been active for a long time, or even a short time, but there's been a strong connection, if there's a court case in the military prison, then we'll go, we'll, you know, people will try and go there, to be present in the court. Again, in solidarity, and I think it doesn't just limit itself to the Fridays that we go out. And I think everyone who's a regular participant, I guess, in the demonstrations, has a story to tell about the personal relationships that they've developed. And I think, you know, having that, it sounds like a cliche, and I'm a bit cautious about saying it. The fact that even though Israel is building this wall and really trying to separate the Palestinians from those people living in Israel, I mean, they're really trying with the checkpoints and the areas A and B and C and permits and all this stuff. We still manage to develop these relationships. So, and I think breaking down those walls in our own minds is a big part of what we do. I think as much as the state tries, with those who want to, they don't succeed.
Yeah, and of course, it's really important where you come from. You know, each one of us has different backgrounds. Some of us, I grew up in a very radical left wing, but I actually went, I did serve in the army between 1998 to 2001, and even being there and knowing that it might be wrong, I didn't have the community. There was no refusenik network, so I didn't really know what to do and if to refuse, and I believe in democracy these days. So some people become radical politically, they actually turn into anarchists, they don't believe in democracy anymore. Some people still believe that by joining the Palestinians, the most democratic things they can do. If you look at the struggle in East Jerusalem, a lot of the organizers there that might consider themselves anarchists and anarchists against the world join these demos. A lot of people over there are trying to work on the Israeli democratic discourse of equality, while you see some other kids, like we had two kids who refused to go to the army few months back. One of them, from very unknown reason, was released the day he went there, but the other person, Noam, she was there for the last... she was released today, finally.
Yes, I was about to say she was released today.
She was released today, and I think she was for 6 weeks, maybe, in and out of military jail, which is amazing. This is an 18-year-old boy. You know, I know Alon, the other guy. I know him because we both climbers, and I know him since he was like 13. And in the last few years, he started to ask me questions and started to participate, and now he's like super involved with everything that's going on. You know, from somebody who only played music and was caring about the people around him, but had no understanding what's happening on like the other side. And For people who don't know Israel and Palestine, it's very extreme because Tel Aviv in the West Bank is 15 minutes drive. It's not, you know, it's not that you live in San Francisco and there's something going in Mexico. It's literally from the east side of West Side of Israel, including the West Bank, is an hour and a half drive crossing the whole country. So it's a personal kind of eye-opening. And as Ruth said, I think a lot of us try to believe that we're breaking these barriers. For me, it's definitely the reason I started was I want Palestinians to know that they're like the people who want to supporting their cause, you know, of equality and justice. And being involved in this village near Elin, I created really strong friendship with one of the people from the very first moment I felt welcome. I stayed there overnight by myself, which is if you tell anybody in Israel that I went to sleep in a village in Palestine by myself, they freak out. They think I'm crazy. They feel like you're out of your mind. How come they didn't kill you? And this is a village where the mayor is, like, the ruling party is Hamas. So it's not that, it's even the more extreme, but you learn that, like, you just make all these personal connections which make things unreversible. Like, you can't abandon any more your friends over there. Even when I'm here, I'm like, I'm in touch and I'm following. And you try to do what you can, and it's just, I think
also that's the thing. Like, you do what you can. I think living here is as conscientious Israelis, and you can't turn back. Once you've gone into the West Bank, you've joined the demonstrations, you've met people, you become emotionally involved as well, and your awareness grows. And you can't turn back. I personally, you start like this process of really understanding. I was my story is slightly different. I didn't go to the army even though I was drafted. I'm not a refusenik, but I got out through other means. But I've been meeting Palestinians since I moved here when I was 15. It was 13 years ago. So even before I was involved in 1999, even before I was involved with Anarchists Against the Walls, again, radical left-wing parents, which isn't the same for everyone. I'm pretty lucky in that sense. My parents are super supportive. But, yeah, I think, once you start, you can't come back. And I think it's, I think we have a responsibility or an obligation because we are aware of what's going on and as conscientious Israelis to support this, to support the Palestinians' right to self-determination.
How do settlers react to seeing Israelis protesting alongside the Palestinians?
I think it's one thing people don't understand from far away and trying to do this is to distinguish between settlers and non-settlers in Israel. The general public, and you see in the elections, support the settler movement. Maybe up to 85 members of the parliament out of 120 are supportive of settlers, like actively supportive of the settlers movement, and not really opposing, like nobody in the Zionist movement opposes the occupation actively. They just sometimes announce something here and there. So there is a growing nationalist, patriotic move since the last election happened, even before, leading by mostly by one group called Im Tirzu, and they're like neo-Zionists, as I call them. You know, they don't come much to like where there is demonstration with Palestinians, but they do create a lot of internet work and events that are in Israel. For example, today there was an event in the University of Tel Aviv to remember the Nakba, the disaster of in 1948 when all the Palestinians, or many Palestinians, around 750,000 people were deported and became refugees. They created a counter demonstration that was very verbally violent, and some individuals were violent. But this is all supported by the Institute of Israel. You know, all the institutions supported. There are laws that don't allow you to teach the Nakba anymore. They try to now all these school trips taking you to holy sites in the West Bank, specifically to Hebron. So the response of the settlers as a movement is pretty much supported by the state. The settlers are armed, and they're armed and protected. They're allowed to carry weapons. So if you're doing an action near a settlement, you're putting yourself in danger. Fortunately, nobody got shot by them during a joint demonstration. But we have at least one incident of a kid in Bet Uma who was killed while settlers decided to go into the village and shoot.
He's working with his dad on their land.
Yeah. And it just, one of the most radical settlements, and just like went and killed this 17 years old Yusuf Ikhlil, and nobody got arrested. I don't even know if the case is still open. And they are showed in the media in Israel and around the world. They might be radical because sometimes they confront the army. But it's totally supported. It's a game that they're playing. There is nothing there that is not like understandable and agreed by the government. I always say this is like we have the military, we have the police, we have the border patrol, and the fourth security forces are the settlers. Not officially, but this is what they are, and they're the most efficient for the government, Zionist propaganda and policies.
I also think with the another thing to clarify for people listening about settlements, one of the classic images most people have of settlements is some hilltop youth with their two caravans and a tent, and they're occupying this hilltop somewhere. Where in actual fact, what you have is very, very well-established, well-infrastructured, very built-up settlement blocks, which effectively break up the whole of the West Bank. They split the north from the center and the center from the south. So if anyone could get a map out now while I'm talking, it's easier to see with a map. But you have a north to south spread from Nablus down to Hebron. What the settlement blocks does is split that all up. It's completely purposeful. It's a tactic. It's a government tactic to prevent any sort of viable establishment of a Palestinian state, and also to break up the West Bank into separate entities. So there's no continuity. There's no international borders. There's no resources. And if you look at the master plans for settlements, I mean, there's actual master plans. This is a government-sponsored, illegal, complete violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. So I think that image of the settlers being this like wild bunch of kids on a hilltop is an image that needs to be dispersed. Not actually in demonstrations, but during the olive harvest, going out and basically protecting farmers and documenting settler violence against farmers during the olive harvest last year, we were near Nablus, a village just outside of Nablus, and a bunch of kids, maybe six, seven of them, their faces hidden with their T-shirts, very, very violent, very aggressive. When they know that you are Jewish Israeli, they start cursing you. They call you all sorts of names, self-hating Jew, betrayer. And they're like these feral, kids who've grown up in a very disturbed environment, I personally think, and with a very disturbed education. And the way that they're brought up is that they feel that they've been given this God-given right to be where they be, and how dare we come and disturb that. Even yesterday, there was this brilliant action done, Palestinian-led action with international and Israeli activists to block Ma'ale Adumim settlement. Now, Ma'ale Adumim settlement is like 14,000 people. You would never think it's a settlement. It's even if you ask the people living there, a lot of them will be living there because it's just cheaper, because they have subsidized housing. The reactions are varied. I also think in terms of going back to talking about anarchists against the wall, the even the term anarchist in Israel isn't the same, it isn't understood in the same way as it might be in other countries, especially in the UK, which is where I grew up. Where basically it's kind of maybe not completely understood, but at least respected as some sort of political theory or political understanding. Here in Israel, as an anarchist, it's basically akin to, it's a derogatory term. It basically, it's seen as being very, very bad. It's seen as being very violent and a Satanist. Like, it has this, like, weird cultish, like, you know, if you're... I mean, even there's been recently these social housing protests that happened last summer in the UK, and I heard from a friend who went to a demonstration a couple of days ago, this whole social housing protest, which had just come up again, and he heard one of the lead organizers speak during an interview and saying something like, yeah, but you know, I'm not an anarchist. To try and to say that, you know, he's not here to disturb the peace or to bring down the government or to, which I personally have no problem with, but I think that it's seen here as a very, very, it's not respected in the same way as a political theory. There's no understanding around it. The same understanding that perhaps in other countries and other places there is. And so as soon as, you know, they'll look at you, they'll even call you an anarchist as like a derogatory term.
It's very similar though in the US. A lot of the occupation movement really try to distinguish themselves from anarchists, is my feeling. The US and Israel anarchy is a bad word. And actually in the US it comes from a much worse history of anarchist repression legally. As much as we suffer from what the public say, in Israel we don't suffer as anarchists from like horrible laws like conspiring, which become very popular in the US every time anarchists try to organize something. Mm-hmm. And you can see that the thing that the anarchists, I think in the US and in Israel, they're a bigger threat for the liberals than the extreme right wing, because the liberals try to show equality and justice values while they're kind of human right washing other things, while anarchists going full way and deconstructing the view of society and deconstructing the idea of patriotism and nationalism and colonialism in different places. This is why it's such a big threat for liberals, who are most of the time, both in Israel and what I saw a bit here in the U.S., they try to be part of the system and try to change it they're really trying to be part of the political game, while anarchists don't. In some places, there's more direct action involved in it. In some places, it's working with social movement and grassroots organizations. But... yeah, both places, being an anarchist is not that a good of a thing.
Can one of you define Zionism as used in Israel? Because in general American discourse, the use of the term is often considered anti-Semitic.
The only people who... I think this is my personal view, and a lot of people that I know agree with me, and I actually had this view before I became an anarchist activist. Zionism was a nationalist movement to create a Jewish state. And as a Zionist movement with a clear goal, it's ended in 1948. Since then, there is an ongoing fight inside the Jewish community around the world in Israel, what Zionism is. As you said, the right-wing people, the settlers, said we are continuing the tradition of Zionism from the 19th and 20th century. But the Zionism left, we go and tell you, we need to create a state with majority of Jews, so we need two states where Palestine will be separated from us. Zionism actually had a section that had been outcasted till the late 30s, 1930s, that said we should have one state with equality where all citizens between the river and the sea should have equal rights, like the ANC in South Africa had in their mind. And today, I think specifically in the U.S., it's slightly different in Europe, but in the U.S. when you say Zionist, you actually mean pro-Israeli activist. And the pro-Israeli activist calling themselves Zionist, they're proud of it. It's almost saying, I'm an apatriot, I'm an automatic supporter of Israel. Some people, as you said, taking it as a derogatory term and saying, oh, look at this Zionist plot, or look at these conspiracies. Around 9/11, a lot of these things came out, blaming Israel and Zionism as part of this big conspiracy. I'm not going to address if it's my point of view about it, but this is like the bad way. Or if you go to the real right-wing people here who hate Jews, they will consider it, will talk about Zionism. The Palestinian people here confront Zionism because the mainstream Jewish leadership in Israel and around the world use this word to support any act that Israel does. So I'm considering myself anti-Zionist, not because I really know what Zionism is or care what Zionism is, because Zionism for the majority of Jews is to support whatever Israel does. And by definition, but in the moment, it's going back to your question at the beginning of like, how can we support a nationalist movement? Well, we're not exactly supporting a nationalist movement, but we're definitely going against a different nationalist racist movement who try to be superior to the other ethnicity of this land. And it's complicated. I did around 50 talks in the US, and I would say that for me, it doesn't really matter. It's a thing that, like, there's so many definitions and arguments about it that it's not really a big issue. I use it as a political statement when I say I'm an anti-Zionist.
How does being Israeli citizens who show up to Palestinian protests decrease the violence of Israeli occupational forces?
I think, first of all, just to clarify, I think when you said before that we see in videos how the state reacts to anarchists against the wall, I think it's important to say that, first of all, I mean, that's how the state's reacting to the Palestinians. We happen to be there. I'd also think to clarify that point about Israelis being, like, I hear this argument a lot about having, you know, as Israelis us being there, the violence is reduced on behalf of the Israeli state. I don't know if that's, maybe once that really, really, really was the case. My experiences, I don't know, maybe it's kind of true still.
There was a regulation in the army that you're not allowed to shoot live ammunition when they're internationals and Israelis. And this mostly why a lot of solidarity work started during the Second Intifada. Unfortunately, the truth that it's not like that. We've been in demonstrations when people are killed by live ammunition and by other means. I'll let you continue.
I also think, you know, there's Israelis who've been shot, which is, you know, the whole reason, you know, one of the whole pushing points for anarchists against the wall to come to the forefront of media attention was because an Israeli was shot in the legs with live ammunition back in 2002. And I think, it was like 2 months ago that a friend of ours was shot in the head with a rubber bullet. I mean, she's fine. Thank God she's fine. But I'd be very surprised if the guy who shot her thought that she was that she wasn't Israeli or an international. And you know, there's plenty of stories about this. Sorry. I think that's something which it doesn't make what we do less important. I also think just to state that. But even last week there was live ammunition used in a demonstration. It's rare, but it does happen.
I think the one advantage.
Yeah, I was in it when I went to Kufr Adik the first time. We were very, very up close with the youth, with the Shabab, very close to where the soldiers were. We were at a range where they could no longer shoot tear gas because it was just going over our heads, and so they were using live ammunition and they were shooting in the air. But there were the Palestinians, not us. The Palestinians were shouting, "There are Israelis here! There are Israelis here!" They didn't pay much attention.
How does the Palestinian Authority, or PA, tend to deal with anarchists against the wall groupings?
I usually don't like to criticize the PA too much, and I think I'm just going to be very direct to your question. The PA have a different involvement through the popular struggle. They endorse it when it's useful for them, and obviously in the last year or so it became more and more useful. For many times they didn't get any involvement. But in some villages, actually, were afraid of losing popularity because the popular struggle is an apolitical struggle. they don't really do much against Israelis in most of the time that I, from what I saw. I got detained with two other Israelis once in Ramallah because we were driving back from a meeting in a village, and fortunately these two Israelis, one of them she lives in Ramallah for the last, I don't know how long, but more than 10 years I think now. And the other person is very involved with the popular struggle. So we had to make a few phone calls because otherwise they would have had to hand us to their Israeli friends on the other side and prove that they're doing what the Israelis told them to do, which to take Israelis out of the Palestinian cities. They're really not involved in many of these places. A lot of these activities also go in a place where the Palestinian police are not allowed, which is by the Oslo Accords in the 90s, defined there were three areas, Area A, Area B, Area C. I'm not going to explain all of it, but Area C is full control by Israelis, so the PA can't even do anything over there, even if they wanted it.
I've actually had no experience opposite the PA whatsoever, only through stuff I've heard from the news or from Palestinian friends and so on, but I don't have anything to add. Should ask a Palestinian.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to criticize a lot, but there is a lot of stuff, tension sometimes between the popular struggle and the Palestinian authority. So, but towards Israelis, they don't do much. So there's hardly any interaction with them.
Abrasha, you're living right now in Arizona in the United States. What comparisons can you make between the struggle around the wall on the border with Mexico and immigrants in the United States to that of the apartheid in Israel against Palestinian communities and peoples?
Let me start with some stuff that I might be a bit controversial or provocative compared to my fellow activists in Arizona and pro-Palestinian activists here. I actually think there's a very big difference between the wall here and the wall in Israel in terms of the reality, not in terms of a lot of ideologies behind it. The wall here is much more similar to what's built up now in the southern border of Israel, trying to stop African refugees and economic refugees coming to work in Israel. Saying that, there are a lot of similarity between Arizona or the U.S. to Israel in terms of post-colonialist or colonialist culture who totally dismiss the indigenous communities and trends of culture and movement of population in the region for hundreds of years before the colonialist power came. Both in Israel, it's become, as I said earlier, illegal to talk about what happened to Palestinians in 1948. Now in Arizona, there is all the story about the ethnic studies. For the people who don't know, I don't know if Ruth knows about it, say banning the Hispanic studies. So you're not allowed to talk about the history of this land by the majority of the population who are Hispanic. And till, 150 years ago, it was Mexican land. The other big similarities are the companies that are involved. It's not the similarities, who is involved. You know, G4S, a very big company that is I think the second company in the world in terms of the number of employees, is a security company. It's after Walmart. They specialize in privatizing and supplying a lot of security services. So in Palestine, the checkpoint is being privatized. And there's some checkpoints. The army is not there anymore. It's private companies actually owned by G4S. Over here, a lot of the detention facilities and the detention buses are owned by the same company, G4S. So a company that obviously benefiting from border security equipment, so it will be mostly cameras, some kind of sensors that are being tested in Israel on the wall and then exported to the rest of the world. I don't want to say that it's not similar, but for me the wall here is problematic not because of the stopping the migration, because it's an indigenous land. It's a Tonoa Hodham land on the border in south of Arizona, mostly Tonoa Hodham. tribe, and it's their land, and they're not allowed to do what they want. It's been harassed by the border patrol, by white militias that comes here, by many, you know, forces and people that are not actually the owners of the land, in my point of view. Yeah, it's American land, but who, like, history of a settlement, indigenous settlement, in Tucson, where I come from, for 12,000 years, you know. So the Americans who are here for the last less than 200 years can't even call themselves owners of the land just because they had more fire gun or cheated, like most of the U.S. signed treaties and then stole land. And I think this is the main problem for me when people talk about the border here, because they connect it to the migration issue, where the migration issue is super important. I think, don't get me wrong, I'm very supportive of migration rights, but it's actually ignoring the fact and the talk about decolonizing what's happening on this land and decolonizing the discourse of that. Yeah, it's not only that there is violation of human rights for migrants who come from Latin America, there's an ongoing genocide, ethnic cleansing of the indigenous communities here, which is very similar to what's happening in Palestine. So the connection for me is more about displacement and taking over land than actually is a visual wall versus wall or offense versus wall or whatever you want to call it. It's this colonist approach of like dismissing the history of the land. I personally developing a project is going to try to compare it as a photographer. I'm going to try to compare displaced communities in the Southwest that have been displaced by colonist powers, both Spanish and American, to displaced Palestinian communities from 48 and 67 and maybe today, but because my interest is in ruins and not existing communities, it probably will be less about existing communities in Palestine, more about 48 Palestinians. So the important for me as an activist is to expose these companies the most as a beginning, because it's really that they benefit from, you know, from death. It's not less than that. The benefit from misery and death. And we need to expose these connections.
What are current struggles that Anarchists Against the Wall are involved in that listeners should be aware of? What are some other good sources of news and information on the occupation and the struggles? Can you also say something about the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement that that's been initiated around investment in Israel as a way of addressing the occupation of Palestinian lands?
Ending the occupation?
No, I think it's and global justice. It's the second one. I think the main thing that we are, because we're working with the Popular Struggle Committee in Major, and the Popular Struggle focus on, the first thing is what Ruth said, the Israel occupation, but go to details, like expansion of settlements that takes over Palestinian land in many places. The military behavior is another thing that we focus on. Obviously, the ongoing construction of the wall, which comes out of our name. And there is a big group that Anarchists Against the Wall doesn't come with statements or petitions. So we're not, as a group, signed on the BDS, but I can tell you that the vast majority of people support the BDS campaign. There is a BDS Israeli group that's dealing with that, just because it makes more sense logistically to deal like, with things differently. I think that the majority of Anarchists Against the Wall work is to mobilize people into to the West Bank or in Israel to be part of political actions and whatever that means, you know, but any for poor Palestinian stuff.
I think it's also another aspect to do with political prisoners supporting their struggle. There's a very particular law that Israel uses within the West Bank. It's administrative detention, which I'm pretty sure is left over from the British Mandate, not from the Ottoman Empire, which basically means that somebody can be held with indefinitely under the pretense of security reasons. The thing is that their lawyer won't ever see whatever evidence it is that the state has against them.
They sometimes show it, but it's mostly not. And, you know, they sometimes show you the evidence, but it doesn't really help because they have the power to like extend your detention, whatever they want.
He doesn't, you know, even if they do have evidence or doesn't have evidence, what I'm saying is they don't use, they basically say, okay, this person is a security threat, but they don't take them to trial. They don't, there's no due process of law. And they'll just be, their detention would be extended every 6 months. And there's some horrific, really sadistic stories of, the prison guards taking a prisoner and saying, like, right now, this is, you know, you're going to be released tomorrow. And the next day, the prisoner will pack up all his stuff and he'll be taken to the gate, only to be told at that moment he's about to be released that he just got another 6 months. And the psychological impact that this has, I mean, it's, and I think this is something that also individuals within Anarchists Against the Wall focus on prisoners, the prisoner struggle. So I think there's different things that can be, in terms of, like, we don't have a particular, like, a campaign or we're not, I mean, we're really, in this sense, we truly are like an anarchist group. We're not registered as a, are we registered as an NGO? I'm not sure.
No, we're not registered in anything. This is the best part because, you know, it's like any anarchist movement. They always look for leaders. And the moment it's something registered, obviously they can take you down. And we're not registered. Part of our prisoner support started a few years back when we made a decision as a group that any Palestinian that is part of the joint struggle means that we're participating in the same actions. It doesn't mean that they've been arrested in the action, but it's going to be the same villages that we involve that get arrested. If they ask us, we provide the legal support. We have a really good law firm we work with. We have agreement with this lawyer on payment, and we provide the lawyer, and we will deal with the fundraising for the for the loyal cost, law cost. And it's really, I think it's a really significant decision we made because we understand our privilege also economically, and having an Israeli Jewish woman in the military court is a big privilege because it's not a Palestinian and the military court. Like anything in the military, a Palestinian is a suspect. Even if you are the lawyer, you're a suspect. They don't respect you as much. So this is how we started. And I think from there we evolved also like, you know people. So you personally go to the trial, to the court meeting and try to support them on that days. It's really, for me in general, prisoner support, not only in Palestine, is a big thing that I believe in because obviously most of prison systems around the world are so fucked up. And when you look at Palestine, it's even worse. It's like there is no slight justice. It's one out of 100 cases, suddenly they found somebody non-guilty, and you're kind of surprised, you're like really suspicious, you think they're going to turn it around, but sometimes it does work. I think the kind of campaigns that we're doing all the time, because of that, we're fundraising money all the time.
I think that's the main...
This is the main, like, call of support that we have constantly. We need money to support our comrades in Palestine, support our friends. If we want them to have as close to fair trial as they can, we need the funds to do that. And also to defend ourselves in court. As many of us get arrested in different situations.
I think that brings a really good point. That probably our main campaign is trying to raise money to support our legal fund, to support our legal fees. That's where all our money goes to. That any money that we raise goes to our lawyers. Anything else in terms of like traveling to the West Bank and stuff, it's all out of our own pockets. And I think and just to say about our lawyers, I mean, it's not a big team of lawyers. It's four of them basically, and they have support from a couple of activists And they do incredible work. There'll be people who are on call basically whenever they know Fridays and Saturdays, they'll be on call the whole weekend. in case there are arrests, and there's a pretty good support network of legal support that's set up and in place. And I think first and foremost, people do it because they believe what they're doing is right. I mean, even the lawyer's office, they're doing this because, you know, they realize this is important. So they'll also be helpful with us, even though we owe them quite a bit of money. They'll also be understanding, I guess, with us, which we're in a lot of senses we're very lucky to have.
Yeah, we owe them more than $100,000. Let's say they're almost doing a pro bono deal with us in terms of the amount of arrestees that we have in the last few years. We're pretty much trying to cover last year debt every year or so. We've been fortunate to have good fundraising tours in the last three years. I've been involved with two, another member of the group being involved in another. But really, you can just go to the Anarchists Against the World website and donate from there. It's really what keeps people be able to know that they can get arrested without worried about money, you know?
Which allows us to do direct actions, whether it comes to putting ourselves in front of bulldozers to try and stop the wall from being built. Last time that happened was in January. I think that even if it just means that we'll be out there on the front line with our Palestinian partners, it's obviously a lot riskier for them getting arrested, but they know that they have that legal support behind them, and that support network of activists behind them.
What last words do you have for folks? What can you say about the 1967 Arab-Israeli War?
I just think it's really important, in terms of timeline, to be able to understand, especially young listeners that have less background. June is going to be 45 years of occupation since 67, not talking about what happened in 48, and Israel officially agreed that it's a temporary occupation. You know, it's not recognized by the Israeli law, and it's a really important day to show solidarity. The second week of June will be 45 years, and if you have tried to look at your Palestinian solidarity networks around you and see if there's anything happening and try to show more support, I'm working with Jewish Voice for Peace, which became more and more radical group in the last years. There's Students for Justice in Palestine, which are a really good group, and many other local initiatives in the U.S., and I really think it's a very important time, because with all the Arab Spring last year, people forget that the first Arab Spring started in 87 when the first Intifada came in Israel, and it was a non-violent civil disobedience movement that had been crushed and broken, arrested and attacked by the Israelis, and this needs to be stopped, and bringing these dates can highlight the ongoing occupation and not just a random time, but it's obviously important to do it all the time and as much as one can afford.
I think there's a couple of things before we go I'd like to add, especially in terms of history. What we do as anarchists now, as anti-occupation anarchists, we're not the first ones to be doing this. Anarchists Against the Wall weren't the first group to call for the end of the occupation. If people want to find out more about the history, then there is a brilliant... The group wasn't called Batsben, but it's how they've been known ever since, who were the first group in 1967, even during the Six-Day War, even during while Israel was occupying the West Bank, were calling for the end of the war and the end of the occupation immediately. And I think we have a lot to be grateful to them for. And some of them are still active till today. I also think, since we mentioned BDS, that people really do find out more about it, exactly what it does mean and what it doesn't mean. And I know I'm throwing this in right now, but it's important to understand exactly what normalization means and doesn't mean as well, in terms of Israelis and Palestinians struggling together, which I think also brings to the point about Zionism and Judaism, just to reiterate that Zionism politicized and nationalized the religion. And I think as an anti-Zionist Jew, it's really important to make that distinction between Zionism and Judaism.
There is a popular struggle committee, which are very good to learn about what's actually going through the struggle. There's the Israeli Committee Against House Demolition, which will tell you a lot about things that we didn't even touch, which is like housing rights and demolitions of hundreds of houses of Palestinians every year. There is Solidarity in Jerusalem, or I think this is their name, that focus on activities in Jerusalem, and also Tayush, which is more or less the same people that separated to different places. Obviously, if you go to, and there is a kind of a more English-orientated website called 972 Plus. Some of the stuff is really good. Some of it is more close to the mainstream, but it's a good place to start also to hear some updates of things that's happening, and it's in English.
AIC.org, so it's really, really easy to find, and ICAD, who do tours as well. So if anyone comes over and wants to get a better idea of what's going on in East Jerusalem, I'm also a tour guide with ICAD, so maybe I'll give you a tour. And that's ICAHD.org. And Anarchists Against the Wall website is very easy. It's A Walls, AWALLS, .org, and +972. And the BDS one is the BDSmovement.net.
We've been speaking with Abrasha Bloom in Arizona and Ruth in Israel about the Israeli solidarity and resistance group Anarchists Against the Wall, which uses direct action to oppose the continued apartheid in Israel and occupation and suppression of the Palestinian peoples. For a discussion of the Birthright Program and Israeli divestment movement, please search archive.org for the terms Final Straw and Anarchists Against the Wall. For more info on the group, check out their website at awalls.org.
Pleasure.
Welcome.
Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm your host, Bursa Goodness. The Final Straw is also available on KXCF in Marshall, California, and KWTF in Santa Rosa, California. The show is supported by Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street in downtown Asheville, North Carolina, providing organic coffee and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that can be found at firestormcafe.com. Have a great week. وتجدد وتجدد خصوم كل خصوم ممدود للسلام كل خصوم معروف لاحتلال ما يريد استسلام طب ليه ايه انا اللي ما اله حرية احمد الدليل لفوق والمعروف بشوف حدود سجن الانسانية لاطفال العالم حرة وانا مالي حرية والمعروف بشوف حدود سجن الانسانية لاطفال العالم حرة وانا مالي حرية احنا بندور على السلام بنكون الحرية من الجيون المانية ان نكون معيون دائما معمية نتفرج اطفال العالم الحرة دي ما نضل بتتحرج للحياة المرة وقوالنا شطرين بس بتبارج الكلام كلهم ماخدين تخرج بتعرج الاوضاع واحنا نستعمل قوة عشان الضعف بنتحمل الموت عشان الحياة عملنا بالوطو
مش بقصة
للحياة ولدنا ولما لقيناه مش بيدينا جربنا نخدها فموتنا كل اللي طلبنا كان نفس اللي ضحينا عشانه برضه كان نفس انت قولي ليه اطفال العالم حرة وانا مالي انا مالي اللي حرية
والمعروف بشوف حدود سجن الإنسانية لأطفال العالم حرة وأنا مالي حرية والمعروف بشوف حدود سجن الإنسانية لأطفال العالم حرة وأنا مالي حرية
أنا بديش أعيش ركبي وأنا بديش أموت عشري وأنا لساني شايف الاحتلال ما زاد إيدي مش للسلام مش مساواة بل تهديني حابب مشنقة وكمان مش صعب والجدار اللي فاصل بيني وبين حالي اللي ما مخلينا اشوف ضوء السماء والارض الواحد هو 50 ولاية تربي
الناس حتى جيوش العالم كلها بتقدر على الحرية وادمان وحباش وفكوه السجن الإنساني لأطفال العالم حرة
شكرا لكم عنات إخبارية.